And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. And now joining me in studio for Greenside Up, we have James Coover and David Scrotz. Guys, welcome back. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, I see
good morning.
You too. Good
morning. All right. Well, guys, before we get started on our main subjects today, you guys have quite a few workshops going on, do you not?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have about 5 workshops coming up between now and the end of the year. The first one is the 2020 KSU Swine Day, and this event is hosted by the University in Manhattan every year. But this year, of course, due to COVID and taking precautions, it's going to be virtual. So this is a great opportunity for producers or even 4-H kids that are wanting to learn more about swine and different aspects of production to be able to join in and participate in this without having to drive all the way to Manhattan. So it will be November 18th and 19th. They broke it into 2 days, and each day it will be from 10 a.m. to noon. And we're currently working on having a location to host it in Independence where people can come if they would like and watch it there and also have the opportunity to network with other people. So this is a great opportunity to hear from specialists from campus. I know one topic they're going to be covering is nutrition. And then also on November 18th is a grazing planning and forage management workshop. This one will also be virtual in the speaker format, but we are working on having different locations throughout the district where people can come and watch it, and we're working on still figuring out the details of planning that, so stay tuned to our Facebook page, and I'm sure we'll also talk about it more on here once we get those details finalized.
Yeah. All right, so quite a few workshops there going on. So James, we'll go ahead and get started with you today, sir. And what you were wanting to talk about today is tile draining.
Yes, and so tile drainage, and that's actually the workshop that coming up after that, at the State Line Crops Conference, we're going to talk a little bit about the economics of plant pathology, and we're going to talk about a little about the grain markets. But after the lunch, we're going to have a key speaker talking about tile drainage. And so I wanted to talk about that today, because this is, of course, almost all of Iowa and Minnesota, and I mean, Missouri are tile drained in some areas. It's a big thing over there. But it's less common here, even though it's been around for a long time. And so just the aspects of, there are some places here, a smaller percentage of our land, but still a amount of our land, the highest production of our land, that could use this tile drainage. And so a lot of farmers are interested in this, and it'd be a really great workshop for them to come and learn a lot more about it, because it's not intuitive. There's a lot of engineering and math and calculations to go along with this. That will be on December the 2nd from 10 to 1, and that will be online as well.
Okay.
And so after that, then we'll have some more in-person workshops. And in fact, right after that, on December the 8th, we're going to have a Winning the Grain Game workshop, and that one will be an in-person one in the Erie Fairgrounds. Where we're actually going to be learning about the specifics of grain marketing. Futures, calls, puts, options, putting all that stuff on the futures. It's very complicated. I've been to a bunch of these, and I still don't fully understand it. It takes a lot to understand this stuff, and it takes a real mentality. But
it's a lot to unpack, basically.
Yes, it is. And this workshop, we're actually going to be teaching people how to do that. So I'm actually excited myself, because I would really like to learn this stuff. I mean, that will be on December the 8th, 9:30 to 2:30, and the thing is free. Just let me know first that you're going to come. Because it's all in person, we have a big place, so we're going to try to social distance as much as possible. But yeah, I really need to know, and it's going to be great. After that, we have a farm succession one. I've talked about farm succession here plenty of times. On December the 17th. And we're going to have places all over the district, actually. Oswego, Fredonia, Hepler, Iola. We're going to have sort of a individual meet places, but we'll actually have the speakers talk to us virtually. And so talking to all these places all at once. And so Farm Succession, of course, you know, farmers are getting older. Mm-hmm, the right. average age is like 57 or 60, something like that. So, you know, there's always a generation to come. But anyways, today, talking about tile drainage. And so, what is tile drainage? Tile drainage is... the term tile drainage is actually kind of an old term. Really, it's a perforated plastic pipe that goes underneath the ground. It's not really a tile so much as it's a plastic pipe.
Right.
And so the point of it is these plastic pipes, they get buried maybe 3-4 feet deep, depending on how deep our soil is around here, shallower. And they're placed around every 20 to 30 feet in parallel stripes across the field. And the point of it is to bring the saturated soils down to field capacity. And so field capacity means the water is no longer moving through the soil except through gravity forces. And so basically a completely wet, saturated soil, it dries it out a little bit, or at least takes the water off. And this works by actually moving the water table down. Because around here in southeast Kansas, our water table can literally be at the soil surface or even above the soil surface sometimes. And so that's the point of the tile drainage, is to lower that water table down to, so that way it has a number of different things that it does. First of all, roots can't grow in saturated soil. They need oxygen. And so that helps bring oxygen into the soil. But also, you know, it's also the most productive soils are the ones we are going to tile drain. The floodplains of Neosho, the Fall River, or the Verdigris, those are the types of soils that we're going to put these tile drains into. And so it's making our most productive soil not so much more productive, although that is a part to it, but actually because it will make it more consistent. Makes it easier to work. It makes it easier to get timely applications. The soil will be less variable across the field. You won't have wet spots here and dry spots there. It'll be consistent. And that really is the big advantage to tile drainage. And, you know, the cost, however, that can be kind of expensive. Tile drainage, it can go up to like $1,000 per acre.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you consider, I don't know, 100-acre floodplain field,
that piles up quick.
Yes, that's a lot of money. And so this is really only done on the fanciest of dirt that's already very expensive. They're just increasing the value just a little bit more, which is, of course, why in Iowa, where dirt's $8,000-$10,000 an acre,
wow,
it's less of a manageable expense. So, but... You know, usually this stuff, it can run $500-$600 an acre. I mean, that's not uncommon. And a lot of guys, they don't terrace the whole, or they don't tile the whole field. They'll tile just a piece of the field that's a problem. Or they'll just tile the drainage or the terrace channels, for instance. And so there's a lot of different options with this. The payback on it, though, it can take time. I mean, I'm talking, you know, 10, 15 years before you even have a payback. These tile drainage, they'll last 30 years or even longer. It's plastic, so it's not... It takes a long time to degrade that stuff and for it to break down. But the advantages aren't necessarily like the money involved, like the cost return, so much as they are the ability to work with the field. And so I've heard a producer say, like, before they had a field that was their most problematic field, they could never get into it. It was a trouble for them all the time. After they put in the tile drainage, it was one of their easiest fields to work with. It was the first one they could get into after a rain. And so that's really one of the biggest advantages, not so much the money as just the capability of it. The maintenance of tile drains is fairly easy, actually, because you don't have to really mess with these plastic pipes. They're under the ground. You till over the top of them. A lot of time you don't ever have to mess with them. You don't even see them. But there will be an occasional clean out that you need to do. If you have a blockage within the pipe, it will lead to more blockage within the pipe because it's restricting the sediment that has to flow through the pipe. And so if you have a problem, and you ignore it, it becomes catastrophic and it's a real pain. But if you can kind of clean that out and keep things moving, they're fairly easy to take care of. I mean, it's like an hour a year maybe to clean these things out and keep going. And of course, they actually have these guards over the top of the pipe, or the outlet basically. Mm-hmm. Because it's like a perfect little home for rodents. I mean, you got like a little circle right next to a river. Right. And so it's going to get filled with, I don't know, mice and skunks and whatever. And so you have to keep those little guys out of there mm-hmm. doing something. But, you know, besides that, really, unless there's a breakage in the pipe, which is really a pain because you have to find it and dig out the pipe, they're mostly pretty easy to take care of. There are some systems that are active management, and we don't have a whole lot of those around here, but what those are, at the end of the pipe, there's like a box, more or less, where you can basically block off the pipe, and so you can move the water table up and down within the field. If you have a really flat field, you can actually move the water table up and down by blocking off the pipe. And so during the growing season, you kind of want that water table higher, so there's plenty of water for the roots. But during the winter, during the winter, you want it high as well. But before planting and before harvest, you can pull that slide up and let the field drain. So it's sort of an active management to the field. And usually this is moved maybe 3-4 times a year, so it doesn't take that much time, honestly. And there's a lot of retrofits to these things. Usually on the outlet side of it, a lot of environmental aspects you can put in, more or less fields of wood chips and stuff that'll flow into to kind of capture some of the nutrients that flow through these things. Because that's another part to it, is the environmental part to tile drainage. It is an issue in some areas, especially in like the Great Lakes areas, where they've tile drained thousands and thousands of acres, because the tile drains, they allow nitrates into the water. They don't trap the nitrates. The water just the water carries on the nitrates right into the pipe and into the rivers. Around here, that probably won't be that much of an issue, because looking at the maps, maybe 3-5% of our land is even capable of being tile drained. And honestly, even less than 2% of that is ever going to be tile drained. So it's not going to be near as widespread here. And also, our environmental laws are way more lax here in Kansas than they are in most other places. And that's likely to continue just because of our much smaller agricultural aspect here. Right. So that's a definite advantage. But you know, one part of it, there is some advantage when it comes to phosphorus, though, because phosphorus is carried along on the runoff on the surface, and these actually reduce surface runoff. And phosphorus is what, of course, you know, blue-green algae in the lakes and, you know, Grand Lake and all that. So in some aspects, there's actually some environmental advantage to these things as well.
So. Well, James, if you can put on set of headphones real quick, I do believe I have somebody calling wanting to ask a question. I don't know if you can hear me or not.
Maybe not.
there's a switch on the side of the headphones on one side there. So okay. Now, can you hear me now?
Oh, it does work.
Okay, yeah, all right. Okay, so let's go ahead and get to the phones. We do got somebody, I think, wanting to ask a question. And caller, you are on Green Side Up.
Down a sweet gum in my front yard. It's a huge tree, and I mean, I hated to cut it down, but it was dropping limbs and almost hit the house, and one was hanging over the driveway. I want to know what I should replace it with in my front yard that would eventually give me good shade. I looked up a tree called a Brandywine maple, yeah, and it's real colorful in the fall and all, but it says it's a fast grower. And I assume that when it's a fast grower like that, that means it would be soft wood, and it would be, I want to have a hardwood tree, and I don't especially have to have a fast-growing tree. What would you recommend?
Well, sometimes they say fast growing, but they don't necessarily mean fast growing. It's sort of fast growing is more of how you take care of the tree in some species. Obviously, things like bur oaks and heavy oaks, those are going to grow a lot slower than our maples, like the sugar maple, silver maples. Those are going to grow fast. I'm not really sure what the Brandywine is. It's probably a relative of one of those maples. So it is going to be faster growing if you take care of it in that fashion. However, it doesn't always mean a weaker wood as well. And so I mean, maples generally have a fairly strong wood to them, depending on the species of maple. And so it really depends on the care of it, how fast it grows, rather than how strong or weak the wood is going to be. And I'd say that the best place to look for, to see whether this tree is going to be good for this area, is to look on the K-State recommended tree varieties. And there's lots of maples on there. I'm talking dozens of different maples on there.
Where can I get that?
That's actually online. It's on the Horticulture Info Center. That's on the K-State webpage. And there's a spot in there where you can go to preferred plants or preferred something, preferred trees, and look for the trees in this area, the southeast area. And it'll be just, it's a PDF of just list and list. It's pages and pages of our trees. And of course, you can come to our, call the local extension office, whichever one, and we can get you hooked up with those PDF as
Okay, well, thank you very much. Now, my second question is this.
Well, caller, we do need to go ahead and take a break. We have a hard break. We'll get you on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Mighty 690. Please call back. And welcome back to Green Side Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you here this morning. We have in studio with us today, James Coover and David Skrantz. Guys, welcome back.
Hi. Yeah.
All right, real quick before we get back before we get over to David for her subject on the day, let's see if we still have our caller on board.
And I'm
caller,
still here.
All right, caller, welcome back. And you did have a second question. By the way, thank you for hanging on during that break.
My soil is pure clay here in southeast Kansas.
Yep.
So let me ask you a question. Is that acidic or basic?
It could be either, honestly. It depends on where you're at.
Okay, I'm in Parsons, so I don't know what that
Parsons,
means.
In Parsons, it's more likely to be acidic.
Oh, really?
However, even in the Parsons area, there's so much variability around here between the two. It could be incredibly acidic. I'm talking like below 6.0, below 5.5 even. But there are sometimes the soil tests come back and they'll be well within the sevens too, like 7.7, 7.8. And that's 100 times a difference in the amount of hydrogen ions in there. And so there's a lot of variability here. There's really no way to know unless you take a soil test really what it's going to be. You might be surprised, actually.
Okay, very good. I thought clay soil was basic, so...
Yeah, not always. Actually, sometimes the clayest and the gummiest of soils is actually the most basic, and it's also sometimes the most acidic too. And so it really kind of depends on, you know, in the Flint Hills area, that's mostly basic soil natively. I mean, after we do stuff, put a lot of nitrogen on it, it's going to change. But it's kind of the floodplain area of the Parsons. There's a lot of sand and flood, depends, you know, of course Parsons, that's Labette Creek. There's going to be a lot of clay, so that's going to be more on the acidic side because it's
okay. Well, I'm in a floodplain, so I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, there's a good chance if you haven't messed with this soil at all, there's a good chance it's going to be somewhere between, you know, 6.3 to 6.7, which is actually a good range for most plants. But you don't really know what's happened in the past with that soil. So it could actually be a little more acidic than what you're expecting.
James, could he bring in maybe a sample of that soil to the K-State Extension offices and get it tested?
Yes, absolutely. So the best way by far is to first come get a soil probe from the office, because it's hard to take an accurate sample with a shovel. I know people do it, but it's difficult. Really, the most accurate way is to come to the extension office, grab a soil probe, and we'll kind of talk about how to take that sample. And it takes no time at all. And then when you bring the soil probe back, then we can mail it off for you. And so it's pretty easy. It's like a $10 test. And we have all the equipment that we'll give to you. Honestly, that's by far the best way.
Okay, so I go to your place over there off of 32nd Street?
No, that's actually the research center. And so that's where all the doctors work. And so the extension agents, we work in the independent offices. So Altamont is the closest one to Parsons.
Okay.
And I actually live in Parsons. And so sometimes I'll cart that probe back and forth. And so actually just kind of give the Altamont office a call after this, and then Sherry will get your phone number and all that, and I'll give you a call. And I can actually just bring you the soil probe when I'm going home tonight. Oh, so
okay. So. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, caller. We appreciate you calling in today. And, again, good stuff there. All right, David, let's go ahead and get over to you. And a very important topic that's going on right now, especially with the season it is, talking about deer.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about deer and watching out for them when you're driving on the highway this fall. This time of year, really October through the end of the year, is high activity time for deer because it's breeding season. So those deer are going to be out and about a lot more. So I know we were talking before we went on the air this morning about how we had noticed some more on the roads and on the highways. And the Kansas Highway Patrol, they actually released a set of tips for drivers to be more alert and aware while they're driving and kind of what to watch out for. And I just wanted to highlight those this morning for the benefit of drivers, of course, and also kind of the deer. So, of course, the first one is stay alert, pay more attention to the road and the roadside, and intentionally look out for deer and be especially alert at dawn and dusk, because those are the peak movement times for deer, and of course those times of the day is also when it's harder to see. And then slow down at deer crossing signs. These signs are posted where deer vehicle collisions have repeatedly occurred. And of course, slow down near woods, parks, golf courses, streams, creeks, fields, because all of those areas, they have good habitat for deer. And especially the wooded area where trees come up closer to the highway provides good cover for deer, so it will be harder for you to see the deer until they dart out of those trees. And because it's good cover, good food sources in those areas, deer are more likely to be there. So when you're driving through areas where maybe the trees are closer to the highway, or around here we have a lot of fields that are close to roads, drive at a reduced speed, because if you're driving slower, you'll have a better chance of avoiding the deer. And also, deer usually travel in groups, so when you see one deer cross the road, there may be others about to cross, so slow down and watch for others to dart into the road. James and I were talking during the break, and we've both noticed a lot of deer that have been in pretty big groups this year. And then, of course, slow down if you see a deer standing near the roadside, as they have a tendency to bolt, possibly onto the roadway. And you can even use emergency flashers to warn oncoming drivers after you see a deer near a roadway, to give them a heads up as well that that deer may decide to run onto the road. And then, of course, they note to always wear your seatbelt, as statistics show that most people injured or killed in deer-related collisions were not wearing seatbelts. And then the most serious crashes, they say, occur when drivers lose control of their vehicles trying to avoid an animal. So do not take unsafe, evasive actions to try and avoid the deer or another animal. They say it's usually safer to just hit the deer than another object, such as a tree or another vehicle. And then, of course, they advise motorcyclists need to be especially careful, because it is a more serious accident if they were to hit a deer rather than a car hitting the deer. And if you do hit a deer, pull over to the shoulder, turn on your emergency flashers, and of course watch for traffic before exiting your vehicle to see what damage has been done. And don't try to remove the deer from the roadway unless you are sure it is dead, because an injured deer could hurt you, so you don't want to try and go out yourself and remove that animal. And the Highway Patrol also includes that if you have a cell phone and you're on the highway, you can dial *47 for the nearest Highway Patrol dispatcher to get you some help out there if you need it.
All right, because I mean, a lot, like I was telling you, you know, before we came on air, that I was in between Deering and Coffeyville, and I mean, it was dark, but luckily I was going at a pretty decent speed, but I was able to stop because there was a deer just standing in the road, and then he just started staring at me for 5 or 6 seconds, then he just darted off the road. So one of those things, I stunned it or something, and he was just like, okay. And then he took off running. So, but I was lucky it wasn't the other way, where he was on the side of the road and darted into the road.
Definitely.
But again, Drive a little bit slower around areas that you think they may be hanging around, especially because there's a lot of wooded areas around Coffeyville and in Coffeyville, especially the west side, where that's where I seem to see a lot of the deer at. They kind of like to hang out in that wooded area near the creek, because I guess that's a good area where they can drink, as you know, get some water and food there as well. So anyway, good tips there about deer. So just be on the lookout for them as they are kind of what's called rut, correct? The mating season?
Yes. Breeding season is called rut, and that refers to the males go into rut, and they become smellier and they start fighting more different things to attract the female deer. So it's referred to as brut or breeding season.
It's like they're trying to depress.
Yeah, they just start running. They just run and run and run. Yeah, they don't pay attention to anything around them. Yeah,
they just run. They don't care if something's right in front of them. They'll just run right over it, basically. Yes.
Yeah.
Which is why they dart out into the roadway. They're not paying attention at all.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
All right. So again, good stuff there. And also, you guys had talked about before at the top of the show a couple of workshops that are upcoming as of right now. So we can go back over those real quick for maybe people that didn't hear the start of the show today.
Okay. We'll start off with the two we have coming up in November. The first one is the 2020 KSU Swine Day. This event is usually held on campus in Manhattan, but this year, due to COVID and taking precautions, it will be a virtual event. So this is a great opportunity for people to participate in this workshop and watch it without having to drive all the way to Manhattan. So they split this one into 2 days. It will be November 18th and 19th from 10 a.m. until noon. And we are working on organizing a location in Independence where people can come and watch it there as well, and also have a chance to network with other swine producers in the area. And also on November 18th is a grazing planning and forage management workshop. This will be another one where the speaker will be virtually, and it will be broadcast to different locations. This will be at 7 p.m., so it will be that evening. So if you're wanting to participate in both, you can. And this one, we're working on planning different locations throughout the district where people can come and participate in it. So stay tuned for more information and details coming out on those. And these are both free of charge. And then we have a couple more coming up in December, and I'll let James talk about those.
Yeah. And so right after that, we kind of have a busy few weeks, don't we?
We do. Yeah,
pretty
very
much
busy.
Every week we got a big program.
Right up until Christmas.
Yes. And so the State Lines Crop Conference, and that's state line as in Missouri, and so kind of a correlation between us, on December the 2nd from 10 to 1, we're going to start off that day talking a little bit about grain marketing, but also the economics of plant pathology. But afterwards, we're going to talk about tile drain after lunch. We're going to have a keynote speaker talking about tile drainage, and some producers talking about their experience with tile drainage. And so this will be an online conference as well. Of course, all of these things are free. That'll be from 10 to 1 on December the 2nd. So please let us know, and we can help you get registered online and get you the Zoom links sent to you. On December the 8th will be our first only in-person workshop. And so hopefully, I mean, things aren't going to be settled down by then, but so we're going to do our best to be socially distant and all that. But that will be in the Erie Neosho Fairgrounds. They built this brand new building there that has hardly been used yet. It's brand new. So we're going to have it there. It's called Winning the Grain Game Marketing Workshop. So this workshop, we're going to be actually learning about how to market grain, putting the grains on the futures with puts, calls, options, all that complicated stuff that's hard to understand, and teaching producers and me, hopefully, how this stuff is done. After that, literally the next week, every single week, the next week after that is the Farm Succession. A couple of years ago, we talked about wills and trust in farm succession. Well, the other side of farm succession is the actual multi-year generational process of one family or one generation taking over from the next generation. That's the one we're going to be talking about this time, the process of farm succession and how to actually do this. That will be on December the 17th. from 5:30 to 7:30. We're going to have multiple locations for this one as well, virtual speakers, but we're going to be meeting together in all the different counties to have those people talk to us virtually. And we'll have places in Oswego, Fredonia, Hepler, Iola, to get that one done. So,
all right. So lots of great workshops. And guys, if anybody wants to contact you about anything we've talked about today, or maybe some other questions about something else, how can they get a hold of each of you?
Well, you can get a hold of us by calling any of the extension offices. The number for the Independence office is 620-331-2690. And I'm usually at that office. If I don't happen to be there that day, they can forward the call or definitely get your message to me and I'll get right back with you.
Yep. And I'm usually at the Girard or Erie office. The one for Girard is 620-724-8233. But honestly, you can just call whatever office you're close to and we can get it connected to us. So,
all right. Well, sounds good, guys. We appreciate you coming in today. And we'll see you guys here again next week on Greenside Up.
Yep. Thank you so much.
All right. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have Open Line. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.